The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. So let's start with an article from the Essential Retirement Guide magazine. Paying for prescription drugs. It's important to prepare for continuous medication coverage. The cost of prescription drugs is one of the biggest expenses you may face in retirement. You have a number of options, including Medicare, that can help you cover the cost of the medicines you need. But not every medication is covered by every plan, and retirees who aren't old enough for Medicare must find other ways to pay for medication. Medicare, what it covers, what it doesn't. Medicare consists of multiple parts, each with different costs and areas of coverage. Medicare Part D covers drugs. Those enrolled in Part D pay a monthly premium and a copay or a cost-sharing portion for their medications. There are a number of Part D options, each with a different price and its own list of covered drugs. According to AARP, the average monthly premium for a Part D plan in 2020 is estimated to be $30. The Medicare website helps you see options available in your area. Visit medicare.gov/find-a-plan. Before you enroll in a plan, consult its formulary to see if the drugs you need will be covered and how much they will cost. Make sure to factor in both the cost of your medications and the monthly premium when you are calculating which plan is going to work the best for your specific needs. Low-income people who qualify for Medicare should also investigate Medicare's Extra Help program, which assists eligible participants with the cost of their prescription drug plans. Retirees can also enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan, which is known as Medicare Part C. These comprehensive plans are comparable to Medicare options, but they're offered by private insurers. Many Medicare Advantage plans offer prescription drug coverage, but again, the plans vary in terms of coverage and cost. The closing of the donut hole. People with prescription coverage through Medicare Part D have long dreaded the notorious coverage gap, also called the donut hole. The good news for those new to Medicare is that as of 2020, the donut hole is officially closed. However, your copays will still vary throughout the year. Here's how it works. If your prescription costs are below a certain threshold, and that was $4,020 in 2020, some of your drug costs will be covered. Above that amount, you will pay no more than 25% of the cost of brand name and generic drugs. Then, once your out-of-pocket costs reach the 2020 annual limit of $6,350, you will qualify for catastrophic coverage, and you will pay significantly less for your drugs for the rest of the year. Other ways to cover medication costs? Retirees not yet eligible for Medicare must find another strategy for paying for medications. Some organizations extend health benefits to retirees until they reach the age when they're eligible for Medicare. You may want to rely on a spouse's benefits or see if you can receive COBRA from your previous employer. If those aren't options for you, explore the plans offered to individuals on the health care exchange at healthcare.gov. And the pro tip for this article is if you're not eligible for Medicare yet and you need prescription drug coverage, see if your former job extends benefits to retirees. Now, from the AARP Bulletin, Your Money, Financially Speaking, the right time to share your finances with kids. Opening the books can be tricky. Doing it slowly may help. My husband and I never told our adult children, now in their mid-30s, how much money we make, how much we have tucked away, and how much we spend in a year. But after taking more than a dozen lawyers, therapists, after talking with more than a dozen lawyers, therapists, and financial advisors for this article, I'm cautiously nudging us toward opening up. The risk of them being caught unawares or without access to our funds should tragically befall us is high. The risk that they will do something unwise with our financial information seems low. Plus, they might learn something. When a parent's finances are revealed only after death or dementia strike, the responsibility can place a lot of stress on offspring, said Bernard A. Crooks, a New York estate planning attorney. I see the consequences, Crooks says. It's terrible. He plans on revealing his financial life to his kids when he turns 60 this year. But there are good reasons not to tell all, too. An immature or troubled child could try to misuse your money or goad you into handing over assets you might need later. Complicated family dynamics or just your desire for privacy may make you hesitant to open up. Which is to say, there's no one formula for when to open your books to your kids. But the experts I talked with do have some sensible advice on the matter. Share shortages soon. If you suspect you don't have enough money to see you through retirement, you owe it to your kids to tell them. Perhaps you will end up needing their assistance. There is no shame in that. Family members have helped one another since the beginning of time. But the earlier you involve them, the more time they have to help you find more resources and make plans. Bigger numbers should wait. You may have barely enough money to support a 25-year retirement and long-term care, but that sum might seem like lottery winnings to a 23-year-old. I have seen it go completely bad when kids found out there was a lot of money, said Diane Pearson, a financial advisor in Pittsburgh. If you still have a spouse, each of you can manage money, and you are relatively young and healthy, it's fine to tell your children you think you have enough to be independent in retirement without revealing specific numbers. By the time you are spitting distance of 80, however, your kids or other trusted financial representative should know where your money is and how to access it. Find the middle ground. Every advisor or attorney who has worked with older clients or estates says you should make a list of all your assets with account numbers and any other details your heirs or caretakers will need to handle your affairs. Put that information in an envelope and make sure your children or whoever will be your eventual representative know where to find it and how to get to it. If the information is on your computer, make sure the right people have access to the passwords they will need. By doing this, you've put off sharing the numbers, but provided assurance to all that in the moment of need, they will have the necessary information and guidance. Gather the kids. Decided to unveil your retirement or estate plans? Crooks and other experts suggest calling a family meeting with all of your kids present. This is especially important if you're not going to treat them equally in terms of information and responsibility. If one child has your power of attorney and will be your estate's executor, you can assure the others that you love them just as much, but you've chosen that sibling because of, say, financial acumen or geographic proximity. Introduce the family to your advisor. It may be good for your children to meet your financial advisor, if you have one, to get a realistic picture of your situation. When Jory Johnson, a financial advisor in New Jersey, was working with a couple who she thought were endangering their retirement by giving too much to their children, she suggested they invite one of those children to the next meeting. "Which one?" they asked. "The one," she replied, "that they planned to live with after they ran out of money." When Mom and Dad relayed this to their family, it was enough to persuade the kids to stop requesting for so much help. Ideally, talking about your end-of-life financial plan isn't the first chat you've had with your children about your finances. The whole life of your children, you should be talking about money with them, says Rhonda Holyfield of Prosper Financial Advisors in St. Petersburg, Florida. "That makes sense to my husband and me. Today, we're working on our list of assets, and as the years go on, we'll be sharing more and more with our kids." And that article was by Linda Stern, who's the author of Living on Your Nest Egg, and she's been writing about finances since 1980. Her next article is also from the AARP Bulletin. Creating New Spaces for Aging in Place. Accessory dwelling units allow homeowners to stay on their property, if not in their homes. Remember mother-in-law suites or granny flats? Those tiny housing units, often located behind a suburban home, proliferated in post-World War II America, until zoning laws shut down their construction. Today, they are experiencing a bit of a renaissance in U.S. communities with real benefits to older Americans. The temporary term for a second, smaller home built on a parcel usually zoned for a detached house is accessory dwelling unit, ADU. To create affordable housing and slow sprawl, some cities and states have passed laws to remove restrictions that hindered such development. In 2017, California made ADUs legal in cities throughout the state. And more recently, the state has streamlined fees and the building approval process. From January 2017 to June 2019, Los Angeles issued nearly 12,000 ADU building permits. "This is a potential boon for people who hope to remain in their homes as they age," says Dana Cuff, a professor of architecture and director of the think tank City Lab at UCLA, and one of the writers of the 2017 California ADU legislation. "As people age and they want a different living arrangement, they can stay in their communities," Cuff says, "rather than facing the stress and dislocation of moving to a new neighborhood. ADUs allow people to age in place by providing an array of options, such as an easy downsize to a separate, more accessible home on the property. The main house can be rented, or a grown child can live there with his or her family. Other options are to use the ADU as living quarters for a caretaker or a relative who requires care. Or the homeowner may be able to rent the ADU for retirement income, also defraying the cost of construction, which can be as low as about $40,000, or it can reach into the hundreds of thousands. An ADU allows people to keep their connections to the community," says Alan DeLatore, the Age-Friendly Program Manager in Portland, Oregon's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, which promotes aging in place. In addition, older Americans often live in homes that were designed without mobility considerations. Many have multiple levels, and most are built up from street level. Those barriers can push older people out of their homes before they are ready to move. DeLatore says, "But ADUs, which can be built with mobility in mind, allow them to stay. Modern construction is also more efficient, keeping heating and cooling costs lower. A 2018 AARP survey found that 67% of adults would consider living in an ADU to be close to someone, but still have a separate space of their own. One-third of the respondents said they would consider building an ADU. People love their communities and neighborhoods, says Shannon Guzman, Senior Strategy Policy Advisor at AARP. Moving to a more affordable location can take them away from the people and places that enrich their lives. We have to rethink housing and find better solutions like ADUs. Rules and regulations. ADUs were somewhat common before the suburban development boom. Think of an apartment above a detached garage. But the post-war rise of single-family housing on individual lots became codified in strict zoning regulations. In recent years, more communities have allowed ADUs on residential lots, as long as they adhere to local size and lot placement limits. Some states, such as New Hampshire, Vermont, Oregon, and Washington, have passed laws requiring most or all cities and counties to allow ADUs with some restrictions. Check with your local office in charge of land use and permitting. Ask what regulations apply, what permits are needed, and what fees you will have to pay. Some communities apply the same regulations to ADUs as they would other homes, but some local governments apply additional rules to ADUs. Some limit short-term rentals through services such as Airbnb. Some communities will allow rentals only if the owner lives on the site. In other words, you can't rent out both your main house and the ADU. Some cities go even further, requiring that an ADU not be rented at all and must be used by a family member or caregiver. Interested in an ADU? AARP has free resources, including a design catalog, technical drawings, resources about financing and budgeting, and a video library. This is rather long, but I'm going to give it to you. Visit aarp.org/ADU and aarp.org/future-of-housing. Now we have a couple of sidebar articles. One here gives you types of ADUs. There's detached backyard cottage, attached addition to existing home with separate entrance and kitchen, interior upper level attic apartment, interior lower level basement apartment, above garage addition that serves as an apartment over the garage, or garage conversion, an attached or detached garage made into an apartment. And here's an article, also part of this, A Daughter Nearby. In 2017, Carrie and Sterling Whitley found that maintaining their house in Santa Cruz, California was becoming a challenge. But the Whitleys, who are in their 80s, had owned the house since 1971 and didn't want to move. So instead, they moved their daughter in. Brenda Whitley, 60, now lives in a 500-square-foot addition that costs $158,000 to build. The family got some help from a program called My House, My Home, a partnership between Habitat for Humanity, Monterey Bay, the city and county governments, and Senior Network Services. And they did some of the construction work themselves. On Sundays, Brenda takes her father to his religious meetings. She helps with the yard work and keeps an eye on their health. The decision to move in was not a difficult one, and it has saved money for Brenda and her parents, she said. I figure I could continue paying my mortgage, or I could pay into something that will help my parents out. With the arrangement working well for all of them, Brenda says the plan is to continue for some time. That's our dream, Brenda says. I don't want them to go into assisted living. This way, they would be able to stay at home. I could check on them every day. I feel very lucky. And the other sidebar article, A New Home for Dad. When Walt Drake decided to downsize in 2013, he sold his house in Decatur, Georgia, to his son, Scott. But Walt, a 75-year-old practicing attorney, couldn't find a condo he liked. So Scott, 44, built a detached 800-square-foot ADU for his dad. It has worked out great, Scott said. It's very private. I can go a few days without seeing him, or I can see him 5 times a day if I want to. The ADU was built on ground level to eliminate steps. Walt is in good health, but his son says having the ADU has made it simple to check on Walt when he has had medical issues. The arrangement has also allowed Scott's 2 daughters a whole new level of interaction with their grandfather. Scott said it cost around $350,000 to build. Several friends, after seeing the ADU, are planning to build one as well. We got kind of lucky, Scott says. This worked out as a perfect solution. Now, from the AARP magazine, I'm going to introduce you to one of the everyday heroes. These essential workers are on the job so that others can stay safe. The letter carrier. How can I not offer to help them out? When Tina Weber brings the mail, she also brings compassion. After 19 years on the same route, you get to know your customers, and they get to know you. A lot of them are seniors. Before the pandemic, I might see them, and we would have a conversation in person, and that led to an exchange of phone numbers. Not for everyone, but a few. For example, a customer told me she needed groceries, and I said, "Here's my number. Call me, and I can pick up these items for you." But now, they've been told to quarantine, so they're immobilized. Around the time the stay-at-home order was enacted here in California, another customer told me she was low on toilet paper. I had bought some the day before and said, "I'll bring you some in the morning." I dropped it off before I went to work. I've never received a request like that before, but we've also never experienced a pandemic. Most of the customers I'm close to and check on are widows. There's one gentleman I call who is undergoing chemotherapy, and I told him, "If you're not feeling well, call me, and I'll make you some food or visit with you on the telephone." It's my personality. I was probably raised that way. My customers see me every day. They know about my life, and I know about theirs. How can I not offer to help them out? Some of them have family members who live hours away. My sister, who works for the post office in management, and I are caregivers to our 92-year-old mother, so I empathize with their situations. As the safety captain in our office, it's my responsibility to make sure everyone has access to personal protective equipment and sanitizer. In the mornings, all of the carriers spray down their vehicles and equipment, and we all wear masks and gloves. It has been an adjustment at home and at work, learning to physically distance and being rigorous with the disinfecting of our environments. But I am doing what is necessary to protect my customers and my family. I've always loved my job, and I'm grateful to have it. I enjoy interacting with people, and I enjoy being outside every day, enjoying the weather. I tried working indoors, and it wasn't for me. There are many letter carriers who will go out of their way to help their customers, especially when they've worked the same route for years. Our customers know they can trust us. A lot of my customers tell me I can't retire. I tell them I will, eventually, but I'll probably remain friends with them after that. And this was as told to Jennifer E. Mabry. And the author, Tina Weber, 56, has worked for the U.S. Postal Service in San Diego for 37 years. And there is a picture of her here, and even with the mask on, you can see the smile in her eyes. And here's another everyday hero, the bus driver. "I just say a prayer and try to stay positive." Transit worker Marsha Woods Johnson finds inspiration in her hardworking passengers. "This is my 21st year behind the wheel. I like the people and being out in the open, with no boss looking over my shoulder. But everything is different now. We have rear door entry. You have to wear a face covering to board, and there's a new standing line 6 feet behind me. Those are the biggest changes, those and being afraid all the time. Kind of an inner fear. I'm 56, so more at risk. I just say a prayer and try to stay positive. My husband is an essential worker, too. We have a 14-year-old that we're concerned about, so we stay away from her as much as we can. She stays in her room with her schoolwork. But I'm also a firm believer that everybody's job is important. If other people can get up and go out and do their jobs, I should be able to get up and go out and do mine. They changed my route, so I'm mainly catering to essential employees. Most of the passengers that I carry right now work at warehouses. They work for FedEx or Amazon. I'm needed out here because if I wasn't driving, these people wouldn't be able to get to their jobs. I hope that things go back to normal soon. I miss seeing my regulars and having happy passengers who are not so afraid. I want to sit inside Starbucks and to be able to visit my mom and dad. But I also truly hope this new appreciation for essential workers is not just a phase. I hope people will continue to take into consideration how important we are to society. Now, let's get to know Edna Kane Williams. She is AARP's Senior Vice President for Multicultural Leadership Fights for All Older Americans. What is your role at AARP? My team tries to ensure that all of our resources are available to multicultural audiences. We want these communities to feel embraced and welcomed into our organization. Describe a recent victory. Our response to COVID-19's huge disproportionate impact on communities of color. We quickly initiated a range of actions to help those hardest hit. What excites you about how we age? I love that we don't define accomplishments by age anymore. I don't feel confined by age. I do what I want and refuse to be constrained by what other people think. What concerns you about aging in America today? That the impact of age discrimination disproportionately affects people of color. That the pandemic will be something that many over 50 won't be able to recover from, physically, financially, emotionally, and mentally. What values of our founder, Ethel Percy Andress, inspire you? I love that Ethel Percy Andress was a champion of communities of color from the start of her career. She has left AARP with a legacy of challenging the status quo and always fighting for the moral imperative. What is your greatest challenge? America is polarized. It sometimes makes it difficult to talk about race, the needs of communities of color, or how to bring people together to move forward. We often encounter resistance, even anger. But I think our work is key to helping our country prosper. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.